This is number 0039, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0039. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet La Carmina, the author of Crazy Wacky Theme Restaurants Tokyo. You can visit a lot of bizarre restaurants like the jail-themed one, where diners are handcuffed and put into a cell. What kind of food will you find there?
Well, you've got Russian roulette takoyaki, which are octopus balls. One is filled with wasabi, so the unlucky person gets wasabi up his nose.
Brianna Barkas is from the talent agency Clear Talent Group in Los Angeles. She has tips on what you need to know to break in Hollywood.
First of all, they need to make sure they have an online presence. These days, the way the technology is and the way that the business has evolved, where a lot of submissions and scouting even is done on the internet, there are places where actors and performers can post their materials and submit themselves and be networking that way. YouTube and sites like funnyordiet.com, and there's a handful of others, allow people to produce work of themselves and post it online and create a buzz. Because if nobody knows who you are when you walk in the room, if you can start to generate a buzz about yourself, you know, maybe through the internet, then that's a place to start.
Gemma Rayburn-Baines is the president of A Taste of the Caribbean, which is the biggest indoor Caribbean festival of its kind in Canada. It's gotten quite large from its humble beginnings.
We started 11 years ago at a small place in Montreal with 400 people, and this is our fourth move. So every year we outgrew the area we were in. So last year we moved to the exhibition hall at Place Bonaventure with 2,500 people, and we had to turn away some people at the door.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0039, is Andy Nullman from Airborne Mobile. His company has a brand new online venture called Text TV, that's TXT TV, which you can find at txttv.ca. Andy is also the author of the book, POW, Right Between the Eyes. It's a marketing book. And Andy's also a fun guy as well. So thank you very much, Andy, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? We go all the way to Australia for our first story. An amorous kangaroo in the mood for love has female joggers hopping mad in the honeymoon ranges of Australia's outback in the Northern Territory, prompting a flood of angry calls to authorities. Territory police say they have received reports of a kangaroo stalking residents in the ranges near the township of Tennant Creek, including a woman on her morning walk. Here's a quote. "There was no doubt about what he wanted, the randy old thing," she told local papers. "I turned around and saw this big kangaroo behind me, so I hastened my step." The woman said the obviously aroused animal bounded off when other walkers approached and she sought to escape. Later that day, a woman of three encountered the aroused kangaroo at a nighttime speedway meeting, while a man said he challenged the intimidating macropod and came off second best, receiving a swift punch in response. Northern Territory Police said they are not pursuing the salacious mammal unless it continues to cause trouble. You mean this isn't enough trouble? Okay. Meanwhile, we go to Huntington, New York. A New York animal shelter is seeking donations of Viagra to treat a pit bull with a heart condition. Staff members at the Little Shelter Animal Rescue and Adoption Center in Huntington on Long Island said 6-year-old Ingrid needs 2 of the little blue pills every day or she will risk heart failure. They said a vet suggested it. The pill cost about $10 apiece, and the shelter is asking Viagra users to pitch in and donate their unused pills. Yeah, like they have unused pills. Viagra, as you may know, was originally developed as a heart medication, but is now mainly used by human males to give their sex lives a lift, shall we say. One woman donated her husband's stash to the dog because she suspected he was having an affair. Yeah, so I'm guessing she won't be getting any more either. That's just a thought there, okay? Moving right along, we go to Britain. Famously weather-obsessed British people spend an average 6 months of their lives talking about whether it's going to rain or shine, according to a survey. Speculation about whether it's going to be wet, complaints about the cold, and exclamations about the heat are also the first points of conversation with strangers or business acquaintances for 58% of Britons. The study of 2018 adults by pollsters ICM found Britons talk about the weather for about 49 hours every year, and the subject comes up more often than work, TV, sport, or gossip. 19% of over 65s questioned also believe they can predict the weather as well as a professional weatherman. The most usual explanation for the fascination with weather is that it is so changeable there, although this does not explain why other meteorologically challenged countries are not similarly interested. Whatever the reason, these findings prove that we really are a nation obsessed by our climate, said Paul Llewellyn of Lloyd's TSB Insurance, which commissioned the polls. You know, I never talk about weather unless I have to, which is at work, when I talk to a weatherman on the newscast. Other than that, it never comes up in my life. But anyway, that's just me. On to New Zealand. A Canadian tourist's nude swim and nap at a New Zealand beach ended badly when he woke up with a swollen penis after apparently being bitten by a poisonous spider. The 22-year-old man woke up from his post-swim nap to find his penis swollen and painful and bearing a red mark, a report in the New Zealand Medical Journal said. By the time he got to the hospital in the far north of the country, his penis was severely swollen, his blood pressure was high, and his heart was racing. Chest pains and other symptoms developed, and it was assumed he had been bitten by a katipo, an uncommon beach-loving spider, whose bite is sometimes fatal, which is related to Australia's redback and North America's black widow. The man was treated with anti-venom and his condition improved, although he suffered from heart inflammation and required a total of 16 days in hospital before being released. It was a rather nasty, ill-placed bite, said Dr. Nigel Harrison. Yeah, good thing he got to a hospital on time, because, you know, if he was in some remote area, as you know, the standard procedure for either snake or spider bites when you get those situations is to basically have someone suck out the venom, and I don't know if he's going to find any takers under these circumstances. Anyway, let's get to our first guest on the Stuff File program, shall we? Yes, we go all the way to Tokyo for our first guest. The wacky-themed restaurant trend in Tokyo is continuing to explode with no end in sight. Japanese designer La Carmina, author of Crazy Wacky Themed Restaurants Tokyo, published by Mark Batty Publisher, visits Tokyo several times a year to scope out the city's most bizarre eateries. She joins us now via the wonderful world of Skype-to-Skype communications. La Carmina, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm in Tokyo, and things are as weird as ever over here.
Yeah, we spoke to you on our old radio show about some of the things you were doing in the past, and it just seems to be getting, shall we say, more bizarre as time goes on. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. In fact, Andrew Zimmern's Bizarre Foods was just here, and I was a host on his show. We went around to several strange theme restaurants. I'm here doing the same thing right now for French TV.
Now, you mentioned Andrew Zimmern, and one of the places you took him, I understand, is a jail-themed restaurant where they handcuff you and take you to a cell?
Yep, you got it.
What type of food is served at a place like that?
Well, you've got Russian roulette takoyaki, which are octopus balls. One is filled with wasabi, so the unlucky person gets wasabi up his nose.
Wow. Now, people do this willingly?
They love it. They would line up to go to this restaurant.
There are a lot of, as your book implies, crazy, wacky-themed restaurants in Tokyo. What is it about Tokyo that brings this out in restaurant tours? Is this something that caters to a lot of the locals? Is it something that caters to tourism? And is it unique to Tokyo?
It isn't quite unique to Tokyo. There are some very weird ones in Taiwan and in Hong Kong as well. but it's certainly an Asian thing. I think the desire to unwind by going into a full fantasy experience, that's something that's very Asian. I think that people, while it was originally for the locals, a gimmick for them, a new trend, it certainly has spread to the outside world, and then tourists are coming here specifically to visit theme restaurants.
Now, is this a situation where it is part of an entire evening? In other words, usually when people go for dinner, they go to a restaurant, they have an entree, perhaps some wine, and then a meal and a dessert, and there's a finite period of time that you go to a restaurant. When you go to one of these themed restaurants, especially if you're handcuffed to a cell, is it a situation where you are there longer than you would for a normal dining experience?
You would be there for just around the same time. You would go in, same thing, you get your entree, you get your dessert, the sequence is the same, only in between, maybe a monster would come in to scare you, attack you. There might be a little show in between where the mental hospital inmates are chasing each other around with giant hammers. Think of it as dinner and a movie, except it's a live monster performance.
Okay. Now, the clientele for these, are they couples, predominantly men, women? Who's mostly attracted to this type of restaurant?
Everybody. All ages, all types. You might be surprised by who you see there. Sometimes you'll see a big group of businessmen there after work. Or you might see couples on a romantic date who so happen to decide to go to the vampire restaurant where vampires run around and serve bloody cocktails.
Now, I understand, though, that men love maid cafes. What are maid cafes?
Maid cafes. Those are little cafes where the waitresses wear cute, short French maid uniforms. They'll call you master. They'll fall to their knees to serve you. And they might even spoon feed you and blow on your food to make it less hot before shoveling it into your mouth.
You're kidding.
Yep. Talk about wanting male, wanting attention.
Okay. Now, on the other side of the coin, I understand women love cat cafes. What are cat cafes?
Cat cafes? In Japan, not everyone can have a cat at home because of too much work or the apartments don't allow pets. So women would love to go to cat cafes where there are dozens of kitties running around the cafe. You get to sit with them, pet them while you eat your tea and snacks. And I'm actually going to one in a few hours.
Okay. Now, what are the baby cafes?
Oh, that's a cafe where people will bring their babies to play. There's a giant, big blue couch. The babies would all play in the little area while the parents can sit nearby or even sit in a different room and watch them over a monitor.
Okay, now that one doesn't seem so odd. That actually seems rather normal. It reminds me of a lot of restaurants here that have playrooms for kids.
Yeah. Except it's very upscale. It's fancy. Think the poshest kids you would ever know, all in one cafe.
Since you write about this, and again, the book is called Crazy Wacky Themed Restaurants Tokyo, do you have a particular favorite?
Oh, it's so hard to say. I love the Alice in Wonderland themed restaurant. I think the food is very, very cute. You've got little Eat Me stickers on the cups. You've got food that's shaped like a caterpillar. Or Alice's, it would look like Alice in Wonderland. It's really, really cute. I just love that theme restaurant.
And having covered this for a while, is there a restaurant out there that when you hear about it or venture into it, it makes you roll your eyes?
Ooh. You know, it's only the American ones that really are unbearable for me. All of the Japanese ones, they're great. They're kitschy, they're campy. You'll always have a good time if you go with a group of friends.
Now, when you say the American ones, are you talking about American restaurants in Japan or American restaurants in America?
In America, but there are some themed ones in Japan, too. I'm talking about TGI Fridays, Hard Rock Cafe, Rainforest. Those aren't even themed restaurants, in my view.
Now, these crazy, wacky themed restaurants that you're talking about, are they individual restaurants or are they part of chains or how do they work?
A bit of both. Some are individual, and others are part of a diamond dining chain. They're a chain that has a whole host of, they have a whole fleet of theme restaurants. You've got the fairy theme restaurant, Princess, Vampire, Alice in Wonderland. Some of the best ones are through diamond dining.
And do you find that these things change over or in a period of time? Do trends come and do trends go? Or are there some of these restaurants, these themed restaurants, that have been around and successful with a particular theme for a long period of time?
I think the scary theme restaurants always have an audience, believe it or not. There is always someone out there who wants to be scared and locked up and handcuffed while eating dinner.
And you get to write about it. How did this start for you?
I started my blog, which is lacarmina.com/blog, in September 2007. I write about all aspects of Japanese pop culture, whether it's the Harajuku fashion, the goth scene here, or theme restaurants, which I found fascinating. I also visited a couple on my various trips to Japan. I took photos, put them up. Some publishers were very interested in it, and that's how the book got started.
Well, it certainly is an interesting concept for these various restaurants, and you seem very interested in it. And it's also interesting the fact that you have turned a blog into a book, which in a way is kind of fueling, I guess, some of the interest that some of the people have in these restaurants. So you're helping them as well.
Certainly. I always get emails and comments. Which restaurant should I go to? How do I go?
So
more people are checking them out.
So where are you going today, you say?
I'm going to a cat cafe in Ikebukuro. It is, I'm actually not sure about this cafe. My friend is taking me. I just know that I've never been, and I can always use some kitty attention.
It sounds like you, at the very least, are an adventurous person. Do you have to be to go to one of these restaurants?
Yes and no. I think that the best experience is if you go there with an open mind. If you're too cynical, you know, jaded, rolling your eyes, you're not going to have a good time. But if you're up for it and you want to roll along with whatever comes, whether it's a ninja jumping out of the shadows with trying to attack you with his ninja stars, just go along with it and you'll have a great time.
As big as these restaurants are in Japan, do you ever see a situation where the exploding theme restaurants of this type would work its way to, say, North America on a big scale?
I don't think it would happen on a big scale. I think the mentality isn't quite so open there to embracing the full-fledged crazy fantasy. But there is a maid cafe in Los Angeles called Royalty Maid Cafe. There might be a couple more popping up in the next while, but I'm not sure. I really don't think it'll take off the way it does in Asia.
Well, for people who want to read up on it, they can check out your book, which is Crazy Wacky Themed Restaurants Tokyo. And they could also check out your website, which is lacarmina.com and also lacarmina.com/blog. I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us. I don't want to keep you because I know you're going to dine with the cats.
Exactly. Thank you.
Japanese designer Lacarmina, author of Crazy Wacky Themed Restaurants Tokyo. You can check out her website at www.lacarmina.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is number 0039, and you'll find links to Lacarmina's website, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. Authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll tell you some tips about how to succeed in Hollywood. Plus, we'll learn a little bit about Montreal's upcoming A Taste of the Caribbean. And of course, we have an idiot of the day and lots and lots and lots of stuff, including stuff right here, right now. And a little thing we like to call the Darwin file, because as you know, the tree of life is often self-pruning. You know, next time you get a nose itch, try scratching it with your finger or maybe even the eraser end of a pencil. Under no circumstances should you use the muzzle of a loaded gun. Yeah, see where this is going, don't you? It seems one careless 23-year-old policeman in Moscow did just that. And of course, you know what happened next. Yes, the gun went off, and yes, he's now dead, with a big hole where his nose used to be. This guy was a policeman. Not the brightest knife in the drawer. And if he had a knife in the drawer, he might have used that too to pick his nose. But anyway, moving right along, you know, you can find love in the strangest places, like when you're about to kill yourself by jumping off a bridge, and then you meet a girl standing next to you who's about to do the same thing. That happened on a bridge in Ufa, Russia. 26-year-old Andreas Ivanov was devastated and ready to end it all after his fiancée died in a car crash the day before their wedding. But when he got to the bridge, he found 21-year-old Maria Petrova, who was also in the midst of tragedy after being thrown out by her parents because she got herself pregnant. She was seconds away from plunging more than 100 feet into the icy Belaya River when Andreas pulled her back to safety. Andreas said, "I shouted stop and ran over to her. She fell into my arms sobbing and I began to cry too. We held each other and talked and talked and talked. That night saved my life and hers." The couple now plans to get married after telling their families of their amazing escapes from death. Maria said, "He is my knight and my savior. All that pain was worthwhile because it led me to my Andreas." You know, I get the feeling, though, he's going to have some issues with his in-laws. Just for starters. And what kind of toast is the best man at the wedding going to come up with after this little story? Anyway, moving right along, this is scary. A website in Britain apparently believes revenge is a dish best served crawling. The site, called crabrevenge.com, is selling pubic lice, often known as crabs. Of course, the site insists it does not endorse giving crabs to people, but saying that the lice are for novelty purposes only. Since when is body lice a novelty? Anyway, that's kind of in complete contrast with its other slogans that say things like, "Make that bitch itch. If you want a method of revenge that doesn't involve permanent damage or risk of personal injury or jail time, you have come to the right place." Wow, somebody's bitter. And you have choices. There's the green package, only one colony that can lay as many as 30 eggs for about $20. There's the blue package, three colonies to share with your friends or freeze a batch or two for about $35. And there's the red package, a vial of shampoo-resistant F-strain crabs, which can take up to 2 weeks to kill for about $52. The website also includes testimonials, including one from an obviously satisfied customer who wrote, "I never knew revenge could be so sweet." Wow. Or cold. Or bitter. But you know, I get the feeling that if someone were to send this to someone else, the recipient would soon realize, very quickly, if they hadn't realized already, why they dumped that person in the first place. Moving right along, in Pomona Park, Los Angeles, a 15-year-old jogger unexpectedly and painfully became the winner of a javelin-catching contest. Witnesses say a group of boys found a discarded javelin in some bushes and thought they'd try to throw it. They had just sent the javelin airborne when the jogging teen ran around the corner of a building and directly into its path. The javelin entered his hip and came out through his buttocks. One witness said the boy fell to his knees after he was injured. Really? No kidding. It's not like he's going to do a jig. Anyway, other witnesses say the teen seemed like he was in shock as he grabbed the javelin with both hands and pulled it out. Amazingly, the police arrested no one. But the javelin catcher was taken to hospital. His name was not released, nor was any word given on his condition. The line that shocks me the most, amazingly, police arrested no one. Can you just arbitrarily throw a javelin into the air and hope for the best? I don't know. Anyway, remember when you were a kid and you tried to change D's to B's on your report card? Well, in Cape Coral, Florida, police say 42-year-old Claire Arthur Smith closed his account at Florida Gulf Bank and was handed a check for $10. He then went to deposit the check via an ATM in his new account with Bank of America, but not before doctoring the check up a bit. No, he didn't just add a couple of zeros. He actually changed the amount to $269,951 from $10. That's quite a leap. Anyway, investigators found the deposit receipt during a search of Smith's home, and Smith then confessed to the act on tape. Now he faces a potpourri of wonderful charges, including fraud, grand theft, and failing to register as a convicted felon in Lee County. So, apparently he was stupid in a previous incarnation as well. And speaking of dumb, over in Australia, one freshly divorced woman decided to share her feelings with the world by putting a bumper sticker on her car which read, "Men are idiots and I divorce their king." Well, this didn't sit too well with the ex-husband whose name was only released as Mr. Pope. When his ex-wife refused his request to remove the bumper sticker, Pope decided to sue her. Well, this didn't sit too well with the courts. Judicial Registrar Ian Loughnan said that while he could understand how the father would be upset that his 13-year-old daughter would see what is effectively a billboard each day describing him as an idiot, for all he knew, this may be how the parents always talk to each other. He ultimately ruled the lawsuit was frivolous and a waste of the court's time and ordered the parents to split the court cost and fine Mr. Pope $500. Well, I guess that officially makes him an idiot now, doesn't it? Although it doesn't make him our idiot of the day, that's coming up later. Right now, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. On the line with us right now is Brianna Barkas. She is the VP and head of the theatrical department at Clear Talent Group, a talent agency based in Los Angeles with offices in New York, LA, and Chicago. She's here to talk a little bit about what she does and what people are looking for and how people can get into the business. Hi, Brianna. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
My pleasure.
You can help demystify some of the process that people have when they're trying to get into the, I'm doing air quotes now, the Hollywood game.
Well, what can I demystify for you?
Well, what are some of the biggest misconceptions, first of all?
Well, you know, some of the misconceptions are also in part true as well. You know, people talk about, you know, it's all in who you know. And that is partially true. You know, this is a big networking game in many, many ways, and relationships are really key. And whether that is a relationship that you have with your agent, your manager, relationships with casting directors, producers, directors, you know, one part of my job is to have my own relationships that I bring that can then benefit my clients. But it is also up to the clients, the performers, to, you know, do their own, you know, part to network and create those relationships and build. So it, you know, all becomes a part of a team. You know, one myth I will say that, you know, you hear things like, you know, someone's an overnight success. Most of the time, that's not the case. Most of the time, they only appear to be an overnight success because maybe that one role that gained them, you know, a huge, you know, popular attention, you know, all of a sudden the general public knows about them. But most of the time, you know, these are actors that they've put their time in, you know, they've done the work. And so, you know, it's well deserved. Now, there are those few cases where somebody gets discovered and, you know, and then they truly are an overnight success. But those are generally few and far between. It takes a lot of effort and persistence and drive and motivation. It's a highly competitive, you know, arena to partake in. So, you know, the ones that stick with it are the ones that, you know, eventually if you're good and you know, you show that determination, you know, you can see some great success from it.
Well, right off the top, you mentioned the role of an agent, and you also mentioned a manager. And I'm sure there are people out there who aren't sure what the two do as far as their respective duties. And is there ever a situation when those two entities can clash?
Well, sure. I mean, in general, the difference between an agent and a manager will usually have a smaller list of clients. They will deal with the client in every aspect of their career. It could be in part artistic development. You know, someone could be an actor and a singer and, whatever else. And the manager really kind of looks at the client as an overall product and brand and can really work with them in a little bit more of a focused and personal nature. Whereas an agent, in a way, symbolizes more of the business side of things. And a client, you know, may only have one manager, but they could have more than one agent. They could have an agent that handles them for, you know, all of their film and TV work, and then an agent that handles them, you know, for commercials. Or an agent that handles them for, if they're a singer and they're, you know, recording artist or, you know, in that regard. So, the managers, in essence, keep it all together, keep the team all operating and together and on the same page. And then the agents are there, trying to procure employment and also handling the contract negotiations and, closing the deals and doing a lot of the business stuff. And they're usually more specialized within their field, as I mentioned, like film and TV or commercials and the like. Some actors or performers have both, agents and managers, and some only have one or the other. And, you know, each of those formulas have seen, you know, successful careers come out of them. So it's not as if you can't be successful if you don't have, you know, an agent and a manager, it's not as if you can't be successful if you only have an agent. So,
is it your job? Is it your job as an agent to hone or direct a client toward his or her best potential? Or because I've seen situations, and I have friends who are actors. And sometimes you hear stories about, oh, my agent keeps sending me for things I don't think I'm right for, or my agent keeps sending me things because he or she wants me to stretch in a different direction. What exactly is your role in that regard?
Well, you know, in some ways you're talking about sort of different methods between how certain agents do their jobs. I will say, you know, Clear Talent Group we've always had a strong foundation of really having really strong relationships with our clients that go above and beyond just, you know, another number or, just somebody that we're submitting and, you know, trying to make money off of. Like, we really try to have a strong interest in their careers and really know and understand them. And so with my clients, you know, my actors, if I'm not on the right track, you know, I'll call them in and take a meeting and say, you know, things aren't firing. You know, I want to see, maybe I'm not understanding who you are as an actor. Maybe we need to take a look at, you know, the types of roles and stuff that we feel like you're going to get a better response from, and, you know, kind of regroup a bit. I think that some agents maybe don't go to that effort, and an actor will find themselves in a position where they're unhappy because they feel like their representative doesn't get them. I really try to really understand my actors, because when it comes down to it, the better that I understand them, you know, the better chance they have of getting in the room for the right audition than actually booking it. You know, I have no interest in sending my clients out for something they're not right for, because they're not going to book it, and then they're not going to make themselves any money, and they're not going to make me any money.
Right. Now, in this day and age, when you see shows like Idol and other talent shows out there, and the way there is a 24-hour cycle of entertainment of all kinds, and people seem to be picked up and literally churned out, does talent count as much as it used to? It seems to be a little bit of style over substance these days, or do you not agree?
And
as an agent, do you have to keep fighting that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain amount of that that goes on, as you mentioned, you know, with reality programs, you know, such as the Idols and so forth. You know, you get you know, I talked a little bit briefly about, you know, the manager looking at a client and their branding and who they are as a performer, you know, and where do you market that? I mean, this is still very much a business. So there's a huge side of this, which is all about, you know, how is this artist, how is this performer being packaged and presented, you know, and oftentimes, you know, some of the talent can be manufactured and, you know, I mean, I think there has to be something there, you know, there has to be a foundation there. It may not be that they're the most amazing actor, the most amazing singer, but there's something there to work with. And then, everything else, you know, whether they have an amazing look or personality, you know, people will really thrive on that and say, okay, I'm going to turn this into something. So that can happen. However, you know, there is still, I think, a lot to be said for, you know, the people that have the true talent, and those are people that are really still going to stand out when all is said and done, because this town is way too competitive to, you know, just be based on, you know, a look alone. You have to bring with it something else.
Okay, so if somebody
got to set you apart.
Okay, so if somebody has the talent. Somebody comes to Hollywood with the talent already. They've done theater or acting classes or whatever it is, graduated perhaps wherever they're from. Someone listening to this right now, they say, I know I have the talent. I want to go to Hollywood. Briefly, what would you consider a Hollywood survival kit? What are the essentials they need to know before they hit your town?
Well, first of all, they need to make sure they have an online presence. These days, the way technology is and the way that the business has evolved, where a lot of the submissions and scouting even is done on the internet, there are places where actors and performers can post their materials and submit themselves and be networking that way. I mean, YouTube and sites like FunnyOrDie.com, and there's a handful of others, allow people to produce work of themselves and post it online and create a buzz. Because if nobody knows who you are when you walk in the room, if you can start to generate a buzz about yourself, you know, maybe through the internet, then that's a place to start. Definitely getting in some strong classes and workshops so you're meeting the right people. And meeting some peers and a good support group. I mean, that can be hugely beneficial because, you know, maybe you'll meet somebody that's in your same position and then you have somebody you can relate to and have a really strong, you know, supportive friend, you know, both new to town and, you know, sharing your, you know, the do's and don'ts. And then you'll, you know, you'll be surrounded also by people that have been here for a long time and that can help give good advice to the actors that are, you know, just starting out. So, you know, getting in classes and showcases is really important. And starting to do some promotion to try to obtain an agent or a manager. They have the representation and you start to be submitted and exposed to all the projects that are casting and so forth. But, you know, the way these online systems are nowadays, too, it allows the actor to submit themselves on some of the smaller projects, some, you know, student grad films, short films, lower budget stuff that's maybe independent filmmakers who are starting out themselves are looking for actors. So those are jobs that aren't necessarily, they could either be deferred pay or no pay, that are a great place to start and build a resume. So you just have to be really proactive and think about it as a business and think about it as, you know, you want to market yourself and use all the resources that are out there. There's so much online that the people can search for and gain access to.
Excellent information indeed. Brianna, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk to us on the program.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I really enjoy, you know, this type of outreach because, you know, I've seen too many times, you know, a performer come to town and be given, you know, misinformation or, you know, they're being asked to, you know, pay to have an agent, which is a big no-no. And so anytime I can help educate and, you know, do what I can do, I look forward to it. So thank you very much.
Brianna Barkas, she is the VP and head of the theatrical department at Clear Talent Group. You can check out their website at www.cleartalentgroup.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
If you're into the paranormal,
then you're into Don Ecker and Dark Matters.
Something I have been immersed in for 20 years. Lunar research on items known as lunar transient phenomena. For over 400 years, world-class astronomers have been observing strange sights, lights, flashes, and other things on the moon.
Provocative topics, listeners' calls, and interesting guests.
My guest, Mr. Alan Stern.
On my website, I have a list of 100 or so lunar conspiracy theories. I had to kind of come to terms with one of them that I hadn't really thought about.
It's the kind of show that might keep you up at night.
Speculation is, at some time in our past, or perhaps even today, there is another presence on the moon. And I'm not talking about indigenous lunar folks. I'm talking about a space base by somebody else on the far side of the moon.
Dark Matters with Don Ecker, exclusively on CyberStationUSA.com.
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come, we'll learn about Montreal's upcoming A Taste of the Caribbean. Plus, we have an idiot of the day. But right here, more stuff coming your way. And we start off with the Columbia County Courthouse in Hudson, New York. They finally have a handicapped accessible water fountain. The fountain was installed after a now 7-year report noted deficiencies under the 1990 Americans with Disabilities Act. Here's a quote from Public Works Commissioner David Robinson. "We're doing that for every building. We want to satisfy the settlement agreement." So what's the problem? Well, the new fountain may not fully satisfy the law, however. It's on the courthouse's second floor, which is only accessible by stairs. Well, by the time someone gets up to the top of the stairs in a wheelchair, they're really going to need a drink, don't you think? Moving along, Peter Aspinall is 64. He's a handyman at the Egerton House Hotel in Bolton, Lancaster, England, and he was asked to prune a tree. He put a ladder up against a branch, climbed up, and sawed it off on the tree side of the ladder. The injuries resulting from his 14-foot fall required a 10-day hospital stay and surgery. The hotel was fined £1,000 plus £1,015 cost for their health and safety breaches. But the fine isn't the end. Aspinall is suing the hotel, saying management should have given him training on where to put the ladder. Well, actually, I'm sure they'd be quite happy right now to tell him exactly where he could put that ladder. And moving along, the explosion and resulting fire and oil spill at an oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico has forced the postponement of an annual luncheon in Houston, Texas, put on by the U.S. Interior Department's Minerals Management Service. The MMS says it's busy working the Deepwater Horizon disaster, which will conflict with holding their ceremony. The MMS noted that on their website, the luncheon was to celebrate the terrific safety record of offshore oil drilling. Yes, timing is everything. Well, I don't know if I would have enjoyed that luncheon anyway. It's food's probably bad. You know, the salad, I'm guessing, is probably a little too oily. Anyway, let's get to the next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. You know, coming up in just a few weeks here in Montreal is the 11th annual A Taste of the Caribbean, which is the biggest Caribbean festival of its kind in Canada. On with us right now is the president of A Taste of the Caribbean. That would be Gemma Rayburn-Baines. Hi, Gemma.
Hi there, Peter. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on with us. So the 11th...
Thank you.
The 11th year, did you ever anticipate when you started this 11 years ago that you'd still be doing this and it would be this big now?
And you know how many times I've threatened not to do this again? But I always keep on doing it because, you know, I know it brings joy to the community. And the best part is we're starting to send kids to culinary school with the proceeds. So that's, you know, that's gratifying for me.
Now, as I've mentioned to many people, and now that I have this show, The Stuff File, which is slightly different from the radio show I did, the audience is a little more global. Our audience is all over the place as opposed to being a local program. But I wanted to have you on because, as I said in the intro, this is the biggest Caribbean festival of its kind, indoor Caribbean festival.
Right.
And again, that's something that has happened very quickly. 11 years is not a long time for something like this to happen.
I know. But, you know, with hard work and determination, we started 11 years ago at a small place in Montreal with 400 people. And this is our fourth move. So every year we outgrew the area we were in. So last year we moved to the exhibition hall at Place Bonaventure with 2,500 people, and we had to turn away some people at the door. And this year we're back at the same venue. We're hoping people will get the tickets soon. And, you know, as you said, it's global because we have people coming from as far away as Maryland. We have people coming from Halifax, from different parts of Canada, from New York City. We've got a bus coming in from New York City for this event. So it's growing. It's spreading. We have chefs coming from the Caribbean. We've got five chefs coming from St. Thomas, Virgin Islands, and that includes some of the students of the culinary school in St. Thomas, Virgin Islands. And we have our favorite chef, just for you, Peter Eady from Barbados. And he is coming in with his sous chef and two of his students from a competition he's running through the high schools in Barbados.
Now, for those who aren't familiar with the event, basically A Taste of the Caribbean is an opportunity for people to sit down and have and to taste food from the various regions. Now, when you first started, how many countries were represented in A Taste of the Caribbean, and how many are represented now?
Well, when we first started, it was six countries of the Caribbean represented. Now we've got 23 and growing. So we have 23 out of the 32 islands total in the Caribbean, but we've got 23 islands participate in this year. So it's really, really, really good. And our theme is Mardi Gras this year. So it will include over 100 mouth-watering dishes of the Caribbean. And then we have a Caribbean marketplace. We are going to have a little mini carnival parade of costumes in the event this year. This is something new. And song and dance performances by about 17 different performers. We've got four live bands. And Mello G is doing a after-party concert, which starts at 7:30 till 9 o'clock. And I don't know if you know, Peter, but Mello G is number 4 this week on the Caribbean reggae charts. Not the Canadian reggae charts. He's number 4. So we have him. So it's going to be fantastic.
Now, you mentioned when you first started, it was what, only 6 Caribbean countries represented?
Yes.
And now it's 23. But those 6 that were represented initially, they were basically restaurants locally in town that had a Caribbean flair and a connection to the country that they were representing. But as it grew with more countries, you not only had a local Caribbean representation, as you mentioned earlier, chefs from those islands came up to the
That's
event.
That's right. In those years, we've had chefs from Grenada, from Jamaica. We were working on getting a chef from Trinidad this year because, of course, we're celebrating Mardi Gras. Trinidad has the biggest carnival in the Caribbean. But the Trinidad and Tobago Tourist Board has really been fantastic. They're sending us giveaways. Caribbean Airlines is giving a trip for 2 to Trinidad and Tobago, so you can win that. Lots of stuff happening. We've grown so much, and, you know, now it's one of the biggest festivals. We want to expand into 3 days coming up in a few years, hopefully. But right now it's one day. It's May 30th. It's a Sunday. It starts at 1:30 and goes right up till 9 o'clock. And we would like everybody to come out. And maybe next year some of your listeners in Australia can come.
Oh, yes, in Australia and New Zealand who listen on to this program on World FM.
That's right.
Have you heard from people? I mean, I know how difficult it has been in the past when you first started to get the word out and to get participation. But now you're getting these chefs from all over. Are you hearing from people after each event, rather, who are saying things like, "Hey, what about us? We'd like to send somebody."
Yes, but I think, you know, the hard economic times has played a really big part of not having as many chefs. Last year, we were able to have a chef from St. Lucia, but unfortunately, this year, they could not do that because of the economics as it is. But everybody is promising that next year they will be back on board with us and we can have chefs from the small islands. We wanted to have some chefs from Grenada, and we were promised chefs from Grenada this year. But because of the budget cuts and whatnot, we'll have to wait till next year for that. But we have the chefs from, we have actually 9 chefs coming from between Barbados and St. Thomas, Virgin Islands. We will have a lot of excitement, beautiful food coming in. We have some wonderful local chefs here from Jamaica and also from Grenada, Antigua. You know, so we are good. We're looking good. The food is going to be fantastic. Over 100 dishes. It's very exciting. And, of course, we have some great singers. In the Caribbean, we have the religious influence there. So we have a couple gospel singers that's going to be belting it out. We have some calypso singers. We've got West Can Folk performing company that will be there. And of course, you can dance and drink and taste the Caribbean rum.
And what are some of the delicacies you're expecting to offer? I can guess a few, but I'll let you mention some of them.
Well, of course, flying fish and cuckoo from Barbados. We also have from Grenada the national dish, which is oil dung. Have you ever tried that?
No, I have not.
The oil dung. It's made with breadfruit. It's fantastic. We have from St. Thomas, they're doing a lot of fish. They're doing calamari and with special sauce and mai mai and shrimp, jumbo shrimps on bamboo skewers and sugarcane skewers. And, oh, my gosh, it's very exotic.
Excellent.
Some of the food. From Guyana, we have the famous pepper pot served with home-style bread, some garlic pork, some chow mein, cook-up rice. You want to hear more?
I think our mouths are watering, so we'll leave it at that. But we should mention that A Taste of the Caribbean is taking place Sunday, May 30th. And for people who want to find out information, there is a website they can go to, which is www.atasteofthecaribbean.ca. That's www.atasteofthecaribbean.ca. I thank you very much, Gemma, for being on the program with us.
I thank you very much, Peter, and I'm looking forward to seeing you down at Place Bonaventure.
That's the location. We should not forget that. Place Bonaventure here in Montreal, A Taste of the Caribbean.
Thank you.
Gemma Rayburn-Baines, president of A Taste of the Caribbean. Again, you can visit their website, which is atasteofthecaribbean.ca, where you'll find all the information concerning price and location. You'll, of course, find the link to my website at thestufffile.com.
This is The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. I just want to mention very quickly before we wrap things up that this show is expanding and getting listeners all over the place, far and wide, around the globe in various sources. So I'd like to hear from you, especially if you're new to the program, if you just started listening to The Stuff File program. Drop me a line, send me an email, and let me know where you're listening to the show from. You can send the email to me at peter@thestufffile.com. That's peter@thestufffile.com. And stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's peter@thestufffile.com. Love to hear from you. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter. On Twitter, it's twitter.com/PA Holder. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/PA Holder. So, again, love to hear from you and let me know where you're listening to the show from and what you like about the show and maybe even what you don't like about the show. We'd like to hear from you. Send your emails. Okay, before we wrap up, we do have an idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the idiot of the day.
And we find our idiot in Kennewick, Washington. A burglar who spent about 5 hours on a store's computer after breaking into the business gave police all the clues they needed to track him down. Investigators said the 17-year-old logged onto his MySpace account while at Bella Office Furniture, and that made it easy for them to find him. He also spent time looking at pornography and trying to sell stolen items, all while using the business's computer. He was arrested and charged with first-degree burglary. Kennewick police said he helped officers recover a cell phone, which was stolen in the break-in as well. Why would someone break into a store and then spend 5 hours on the computer logging onto his personal MySpace account and looking at pornography and thinking that he wasn't going to get caught? One reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0039. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And again, that's 0039. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. Again, you can find me at facebook.com/PAHolder and twitter.com/PAHolder. We hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, streaming on PCJMedia.com, and over the air at World FM 88.5 FM in New Zealand. Thanks for listening, folks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. While it may be an enjoyable, pleasant experience, some side effects may occur. Listening to Peter may cause bloating, drowsiness, Tourette's, web feet, or an oily discharge.